you're probably getting this question a lot right now, but it's been a really eventful 24 hours for the Alaska gubernatorial campaign. And
yes.
What is your reaction to Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott's resignation?
Well, you know, obviously it was a surprise to a lot of folks, to say the least. And just as I was, like every Alaskan, getting messages or watching news, and suddenly here's this story. You know, a lot of information we don't know, and of all the details and so forth, but it's clear there was an individual or a victim here of some sort, and I don't know what that all means, but it does change the dynamics for sure in the election here, and how and what that means is still not clear. I think a lot of people are waiting to hear what the governor is going to do or not do. In the meantime, we're here today. We're going to continue to campaign. We have always said this campaign's about choices that people get to make, and we believe we have the best campaign in the sense of thinking about the future of Alaska and where it's going, and trying to get above a lot of what's going on these days. You know, it seems like every time we turn around, it's somewhat tabloid politics. And, you know, I think Alaskans are tired. And, well, I think a lot of Americans are tired. You turn on your national news and you just kind of get frustrated about what's on there. I try not to watch late night news anymore. And I think we need to move forward, because we need to not get stuck into a distraction right now that really it is a serious issue. The question is, what is it? But also, we have an election that talks about the future of Alaska on many issues, from public safety to education to growing our economy, the dividend, all these things that people have been talking about. So it's a unique moment in Alaska politics today, and we need to, as Alaskans, figure it out and then move forward. And you know, the last week or so, we've had discussions with the governor on many fronts, and so this is kind of adds something different to it right now. So I'm not sure where this will all go. I know we're campaigning hard, and we look forward to November 6th.
Okay. And you just brought up essentially my next question. Some folks have been from the start concerned about vote splitting, mm-hmm. and the effect on the election that way. So and Governor Walker has hinted yesterday, and then you just mentioned today, that there's been talks, mm-hmm. on how to move forward. What is that plan? Can you tell me or is there a plan?
Well, I don't think there is a plan at this point because of all the changes yesterday. I know what we were doing, and again, moving forward, I think it's important that we keep in perspective that, you know, in all due respect to Senator Mike Dunleavy, I think there's two Dunleavys running. There's the Dunleavy that served in the Senate, who cut education, cut public safety, did not protect the PFD, all his record. And now there's a new Mike Dunleavy, the one who says he loves public education, loves fighting crime, and, you know, protect the dividend. It's completely opposite of who he is, and we have to keep in mind this election. I know the governor has been posed on, out there talking about Mike Dunleavy's record. So have I, because I think Mike Dunleavy would be a disaster for the state. He has no plan fiscally to balance the budget. He has a gap of $1.6 billion in his plan of how he's trying to deal with the dividend. He has no plan in regards to public safety. He actually said that. He said he'll have a plan after the election. And then he doesn't even show up to events, which I think is a total disrespect to the Alaskan voters. One thing unique about Alaskans is we want to hear and see and feel our politicians. We want to know where they're at. And that means we want to see them at the grocery store. We want to see them at the chamber. We want to see them here on a radio show, because that's what it's about. In a lot of ways, it's a full contact sport. And the players are the voters and the citizens. And I think sometimes individuals, you know, and I look at this, and it frustrates me to no end, because his brother is a millionaire, and, you know, made his wealth through some questionable ethical actions. He spent $3 million trying to get him elected. $3 million. And, you know, these are people who don't, matter of fact, one of the ads they ran for a couple of days, they didn't even spell Dunleavy's name right. Now, you know, they don't care about the candidate, they care about the power. And we should be pushing against that as Alaskans every day. This is what has happened from day one, before we even were a state, where powers from outside came in to try to control Alaska. And they're doing it again with Senator Dunleavy, who, you know, as I have told people, I know we're in the Halloween period here, and people are dressing up in costumes, and we have kind of a one person in a costume and one person underneath the costume. I don't know which one's running. I'm going to be very frank. I think our belief, and I say ours, myself and the governors, because we were in a debate yesterday, is Senator Dunleavy is not a person for the right direction of the state. And how the governor and I figure this out together, we will figure this out, because Alaska is the priority here.
Okay, so the path forward is essentially how best to defeat Mr. Dunleavy.
That's right, because he is, again, I, you know, it's not my words, it's his record. You know, it's when you look at it, when he says he supports education, then you read his record, he wants to put kids in villages into boarding schools, that's his answer, or he wants to go to private vouchers for a public education. I don't know how that's going to work, because when you have some communities where they have just one school, it really doesn't work. Where do you take a voucher? Where do you go? And that's a total destruction of public education, which is a backbone of the state. Yeah, I think you've summarized it right. That we, you know, I got in this race. I believe the governor had a viewpoint, and Dunleavy had a viewpoint. I believe mine was about the future. I believe Senator Dunleavy's about going back in time. And when you think of boarding schools, that's going back to the 1800s. I mean, this is insane thinking. And for Alaskans, also for an individual being bought for and paid for by an out-of-stater with millions of dollars is just unacceptable. So that's, yeah, I think yesterday if you watched that debate, I think both myself and the governor were focused on Mike Dunleavy, that he's not good for this state.
Okay. And so what are some of the options you guys have been talking about? I'm kind of pushing on this mainly because I know this is what people are really interested
right.
in right now.
I don't know what the end will be, to be frank with you. I think a lot of dynamics have changed in the last 24 hours. And the question now really is the viability of campaigns. And we've always believed we have a strong campaign. We have a great network. We have people all across the state. We usually are in second in the polls when in a three-way race, even though we've spent the least amount of money. I mean, we have spent on media about $70,000, where, as I said, Mike Dunleavy spent close to $3 million. The governor spent almost $700,000, including his IE. We spent around $70,000, and we're in good position. Matter of fact, the last poll that just came out, the only person that moved was me, and the only person who went down was Mike Dunleavy against me in a head-to-head. So that told us, for the amount of money we're spending and the timing and strategically how we've played this in the sense of trying to get to the point of where people are paying attention to the election, we think we might have hit the stride right now. And so we feel good about where we're at. But, you know, we have to, you know, the next few days are going to be, as Alaska politics go, very enlightening. I wish I had a better answer, but it's just, I think we know what the data has told, especially this last poll that came out. There's only one candidate that moved, and that was us. And that's in a positive way. And when you're pushed against Dunleavy, myself and Dunleavy, there in that situation, not only did we move up, he moved down. And it's because we do share some interesting vote patterns. There's a percentage of people who like me, but also like Mike Dunleavy, but like me a little more, and it's over the dividend. Because our plan is the only plan that puts it in the Constitution. Mike Dunleavy talks about protecting it, but he's proven in his record, as people learn, he really didn't. When he had chances to vote to protect it, he didn't vote to protect it. When he had a chance to override the governor on the dividend, he didn't do it. He actually voted against it. So his record is what it is. The constitutional protection is what people are excited about that we hear. We did better in the primary than I did 4 years ago in Wasilla and Kenai. In Wasilla, which is his home territory. And so that tells me that, again, we share some of that voter base. And it's because of frustration of where we are, and they see us as a better plan with regards to the constitutionally protecting the dividend.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting. I wish I had a better answer, but
one more on the previous topic. So it sounds like, from what you're saying, I'm kind of inferring that the path forward is somebody bowing out of the race.
We don't know.
Because the previous, I mean, Governor Walker and Byron Mallott, previously they combined their campaigns, but it sounds like in this case it would be somebody bowing out.
Well, the challenge you have right now is that was done
before the ballots.
Ballots were printed. Now the ballots are printed. 1,000 have been returned already, absentees.
Right.
You can't, the ballots are what they are. So we as Alaskans need to figure this out.
Okay. All right.
I appreciate you asking the question.
I will move on. So as far as you and Governor Walker, I mean, there is a shared voter base there. What sets you apart from him? What are the biggest differences?
Well, I would say what sets me apart from both Governor Walker and Mike Dunleavy, first off, my dividend proposal is definitely different than both of theirs. One, I think the Mike Dunleavy's is reckless, leaves a, like I said, a budget gap of 1.4 to 1.6 billion, which means 30-40% cut in the budget. It also doesn't inflation-proof the corpus of the fund, which means it will lose value over time, and therefore his plan will mean clearly a less of a dividend, if at all, in the future. The other, on the governor's side, you know, they put that into statute, which means it could be changed by simple majority vote, which I think is dangerous. What we'll end up doing every single year at the end of the session is debating how big the dividend is instead of focus on how we're going to fight crime, what we're going to do about education, what are we going to do about growing our economy. That's what we should be focused on. So mine constitutionally protects it, and also mine has an education caveat, which I think is very different. 50% of the percent of market value revenue stream would go to a dividend, which would have been about $2,100 this year. The other half would go to constitutionally protected funding for education, including pre-K. There is no better investment than investing in early education. 0 to 5 years old, year olds, 90% of brain development starts occurring in that period of time. That is when we should be investing in education. It's also less expensive. So mine does an education protection constitutionally and a dividend protection constitutionally. Also, it takes it out of the hands of these politicians so they cannot mess with the dividend and they cannot continue to play politics with education. That is a big difference. The other thing is...
That would have to go to... because the voters would have
absolutely,
to approve that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I can't imagine voters not approving this item. I think it has a very likely... Now, it requires a legislature to get it onto the ballot. I think they would have a hard-pressed time because I will use every ounce of my position in the office to make sure we do this because you have to clear this from the deck. The second thing is the issue of crime. I can tell you in South Central, it's a problem. In rural Alaska, it's a problem. Juneau now in their community survey indicated is a problem. So the governor has said this problem's been going on since 2010, which is true. Why haven't you done anything would be the next question. The second is to Mike Dunleavy. He's cut every single corrections, troopers, public safety, court system, wellness programs, treatment programs, mental health service, all the things you need to combat public safety, he's cut. Now, he has a little amnesia. He forgot about all that. He mentions, he did a $50 million add to the budget, which failed, matter of fact, which shows that he's ineffective. But the point is, you don't get amnesia when the record says what you did. When I was mayor of Anchorage, we had the same problem. Crime was rising. I became mayor. We combated it. We came in there aggressively. We did things, added police officers. We dealt with hardened criminals. We created wellness courts to help people who wanted to get off their addiction. Matter of fact, 90% of the people who went through wellness court did not repeat their offenses versus the current court system. When you send them through that, 67% do repeat their offenses. So wellness court investments we made, youth court investments we made. We also added a special unit for domestic violence. And why did we do that? Because if there was an individual who got a restraining order, what was happening was people were coming, you know, the individual who got the restraining order against someone, the perpetrator would come back and there'd be no enforcement. So second time, third time, by the third or fourth, there probably was a violent act that then occurred. We added a team. By doing that, we reduced the repeat offenders of breaking restraining orders by 70%. So it sent a message, you get a restraining order, you will be safe. And on the flip side, the perpetrator will be prosecuted. There is no two ways about it. That made a big difference. And that's the kind of stuff we need to be doing on the statewide level.
How can that translate to the state level?
Well, you have 40 state trooper positions currently funded empty. You take a couple of those positions or more and you make them in special areas of high concentration where we have high repeat offenses. You hone in on what the data tells us and figure out where we're going to hone in and utilize those resources. The second thing we can do, and I did this when I was mayor, we can do it on a much broader sense from the state. Two avenues of drug distribution by drug dealers. Well, there's several, but two major ones, post office and air or water transportation. Post office, Juneau Post Office, which is the southeast, and Anchorage International. What you want to do there is, and I would do this, is I would assign a couple troopers with drug dogs to work with the U.S. Postal Inspectors. Because when they're doing that inside those units where mail is being moved and sorted, you will increase the capture rate of drugs from 1% to as much as 30-40%. And drug dealers don't like that because that means you're disrupting their business. And that's what you got to do. And the troopers told me they were funny. They said, well, we can't do that. I said, yes, you can. They said, well, we got to wait for the postal inspector to come from Seattle. I said, no, no, no. I said, I was on the committee. I chaired the committee that had jurisdiction of the Postal Service. Here's how it works. We will do a memorandum of understanding. We will assign you to the Postal Service. We will pay for it, but you will work for them under our guidelines, but you will work for them, and you will be assigned to these locations. And they looked at me and said, well, can that be done? I said, yes. I did this in Anchorage with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I would do the same thing with the U.S. Attorney's Office with the state. We sent two paid city prosecutors to the U.S. Attorney's Office. They worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office, but they worked on gangs, guns, and drugs. Why did we do that? Because when you arrest someone under federal law for drug dealing, and you're carrying a gun, or even gun in close proximity, 10 years, mandatory jail time, no probation, sent to a federal penitentiary out of state. You do that with hardened drug dealers. And the reason you do that is you got to disrupt their business. You disrupt their business, they go elsewhere. And you do these two things with the postal system and the U.S. Attorney's Office, you'll have impact. This is the kind of innovation we need in our government today that's missing. And you have to shift the paradigm of what we're doing. You can't think of it in the same old way. If you do, we will fail because it has proven that time and time again. So let's just shift it. When I did that, when I was mayor of Anchorage, we had a positive impact on reducing crime, protecting victims, and ensuring people who have addictions that wanted to get help got help. That's what we need to do on a statewide level.
Okay. And so that and all kinds of programs cost money, and the state's been going through a little bit of a money problem for the last few years. So how would you stabilize the revenue spending for the state of Alaska?
Well, as I said earlier, you have to deal with this permanent fund dividend issue, because if you don't take that off the table, then the legislators, by default, that's all they concentrate on, right? And there's also $18 billion in the earnings reserve, which they can tap into. We saw what they did with the constitutional budget reserve. They drained 80% of that. That's all gone. And that took three-quarters of a vote. So this only takes a half or a simple majority. So we have to take that off the table, and that will force the elected officials, the legislature, to make some tough calls. We're going to need revenue. There's no question. Sustainable revenue. Because you can't use this one-time money. This one-time money goes away, then what do? So the way we're going to have some revenues, what will that be? It could be anything from income tax, sales tax, small combination, corporate taxes, might be a combination of things. But we have to do this in order to create sustainability. The other thing we have to do in the budget processes, and right now you'll hear people say, well, look, price of oil's almost $80. Look, we're doing better. For every dollar it goes up, it's about $50 to $70 million in annual revenue. And we place the budget at 63 right now. So you can imagine that's a lot of money, several hundred million. Well, you cannot just hope and pray for the price to go up. That's what got us into this trouble. And now I will say, thanks to the president, he's making it the price go up every day. You know, everything he says, it doesn't matter if it's Saudi Arabia or China or whatever, he's causing the price up because of his crazy policies. But let's put that aside for another conversation. But what you need to do is figure out what the budget reasonable based on the last 5 years that price of oil should be. Is it 63? Is it 65? Whatever that is. Then whatever's above that, you need to take that off the table. And I will, and there's no question in my mind, if that legislature says to me, we're going up to what the current price of oil is, I will veto the budget. That is not sustainable, and that's the power of the governor. You have to say and hold it tight, and you have to say no. What you do is take some of that off the table, put it into the constitutional budget reserve, that revenue stream, and put it into programs that are one-time expenditure. Maybe it's fix and deferred maintenance at the university, right? It's a one-time hit. Put it in, be done. But do not put it into operations. If you put it into operations on an annualized basis, you're going to have a problem. That's how we got in this mess, and we can't do that. But I will tell you, and any legislator that thinks I'm joking, just go ask my Anchorage Assembly when I was mayor. I would come to the meeting every Tuesday. I had a yellow folder. It had a blank veto message in it, and I never had to veto except one thing. And that was on the fact that they wouldn't let my chief of police speak. So I vetoed the issue so he could speak the next week. But I never had to veto a budget because they knew I was serious. And if it meant that we would have a situation where we'd have a lot of turmoil, so be it. Because we cannot be irresponsible with the limited resources we have. And like I said, I every assembly member knew that yellow folder. They saw it and they knew what was in there. And so we had a better working relationship, let's just say. We understood each other's abilities, and then we figured out how to move, in that case, Anchorage forward. That's what we need to do here. We got to move Alaska forward and not have a non-sustainable budget. We have to have sustainability.
Okay. And I
could say two more quick ones.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
You know, a year and a half ago, Corrections had to give back $800,000 of reentry money because they couldn't figure out how to spend it, as an example. I bet you if I went out here and I said to any one of your groups out here, a nonprofit organization, said, can you help me spend $100,000 of it for corrections to be reentered into the community? I guarantee you I'd have a proposal in 2 hours sitting on my desk. Because I've asked this question to nonprofits around the state. Mental Health Lands Trust had $6 million they turned back, not used. Now, there are mental health services in this state that are desperately underfunded. And this is where we're in these silos, and we're not understanding that when you're the governor, just like when I was mayor, you have to see the big picture. And there's a lot of mixed resources out there that you got to bring to the table. And I every day when I hear these things, I have gray hair now. My son says I have a lot, and it's getting worse every day when I hear these things. But that's how we got to deal with these issues. So the money, in some cases, sometimes it's there, not as obvious as we think, because we're caught into this 90-day session routine of, you know, fights and arguments, and everyone once it's done, or I should say 90-day sessions with special sessions, and then once those are all done, everyone goes away and runs. And what we got to do is manage the budget and work with partners and figure this out together. And if we can do this together, we'll solve these problems. I believe it. I saw it, and I've seen it.
Okay.
So didn't mean to digress there.
But. No, that's fine. I put a call out on my social media for anybody who might have a question for you. And I got
a few of
those. And one listener.
What a new world we're in, right?
Yeah. Well, it's helpful to me.
Well, you know what I like about it? I love it, except the guys that never put their, you know, I hate when people go online, they put a fake name. You know, if you're going to say something, have the wherewithal. I had other words, but I won't say that, to put your name next to what you say. But I actually, you know, you'll see, when you see my name, that's me responding. When people go on blogs.
So it's not an assistant
responding
for you?
No, it is me. And I will tell you, when I'm doing, you know, ADN or the Catch campaign, whatever has anything, if I see something and I'm responding and you see my name, and my staff usually finds out after the fact, I will tell you that, which is like the nightmare of any staff member. But when I see stuff, I believe you have to, you know, clarify the record. Now, it doesn't mean you agree with the person, but you got to put it down. And so, sorry.
No, that's fine.
It's your point is I love the new media, but I also, like I said, when you see my name, actually one guy was texting me, not texting me, but online, and he says, well, tell Mark Baggage, you know, that I've said all this. And I wrote back, well, this is Mark Baggage. And he never responded after that. It was no more. The you know, it all ended. The thread ended. And
got a little too personal.
Yeah, I thought, well, okay.
That's interesting. But this particular listener wanted to know your thoughts on alternative energy development moving beyond diesel and or hydro. We've been in a drought recently, so our hydro is kind of failing us.
Right.
So,
I'm a believer in the goal that the state has that we should be at 50% of our internal use of energy by renewable energy by 2025. We're behind. The state has not done a good job keeping pace. I'm a big believer in renewable energy, maybe wind or solar or geothermal or hydro, even though it runs dry. That's where you need the mix. You know, if you have one and that's it, you're in trouble over time. And the more we get off of that diesel, especially you take rural Alaska or southeast, you know, when your hydro goes down, you got to flip the switch, and that's big expense. And in rural Alaska, it's even more when you think about bush Alaska. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out how to move this, but we also have to think about the what I call the downstream job opportunities. You know, a lot of these pieces of equipment, when you do hydro, or not hydro, but wind and solar, a lot of the repair work is done by folks from out of state. So we got to train our own to do that work once we build these systems. In Anchorage, we did this very aggressively. For example, in the landfill, we were flaring our methane gas. Now we recapture it. We actually sell it cheaper to the military than they can buy natural gas. That's unheard of. And it's because we paid for the capital investment almost with 100% of non-debt money. By doing that, you can make it cost effective. And in return, we get is clean air, obviously less emissions, and we displace a non-renewable fuel to something that's already, it's there. The other thing we can do more of is what I call the low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of conservation efforts we could be doing. In Anchorage, we did the largest single LED conversion project of our outside lights in the nation. And I came back from a conference and said, let's just do it. It saves us $400,000 to $500,000 a year in energy costs and also less emissions. So I'm a big fan. I believe in it. I think we have to have a much more comprehensive and honestly, there's a lot of task force and there's a lot of studies. We don't need to study anymore. We got to do. And I am not interested in going to meetings to have meetings about the next meeting. What we need to do is get on with the show and figure out how we're going to get things done. That's what we should do. And no one has to keep telling me that wind energy will work in rural Alaska. It works. Let's just do it. When people say, like in your case, we're having problems with hydro because when a drought occurs, okay, what are the alternatives? Solar is becoming an amazing, I'm amazed what the solar guys are showing me. I saw this huge panel, and I said, well, how much does that thing weigh? He says, that thing is 40 pounds. That's it. I said, what? He says, yeah, and it used to cost $800. Now it costs $200 made in America. And I said, oh, my God. He says, yeah, Mark, it's much more affordable than ever before. We have an old stigma, and we need to change it. So we just got to do more around that.
And people around here laugh about solar because we don't have a lot of sunshine. But solar has actually come quite a long ways. You don't need as much light as you used to make that work.
That's right. It's the old paradigm of thinking that, we need sun. We need Arizona sun, right? Beating down all day long, burning us up at 115 degrees.
Right.
Actually, what you need is light and sun and this combination. And because of the new panels, they can absorb much differently than in the days gone by. It's really amazing technology. And we should be doing, I just went through the Matsu Borough and they have their first solar farm. I mean, unbelievable by Manitowoc Electric Association. We should be aggressive about this because the more we do in this arena, if you can do renewable energy in Alaska, we can do it anywhere in the world. And we can export that knowledge and technology and be the leaders if we want to be. But we have to believe we can. And we have to get out of the old paradigm of, well, we don't get the sun in the winter. Yeah, but one thing I know is we get a lot of it in the meantime. And there's new technology and battery storage that has advanced dramatically. So, yeah, I've seen it. It makes money. It cleans, better for emissions. And gets us in a diversified energy source, and it's a great economy to employ people in.
Okay, great. And then another listener wanted to know if you support the state officially recognizing tribes. I was unaware that we did not. So.
Yeah, we do not recognize. I do. The federal government does formal recognition. Why is that important? Because then the federal government and tribes can have government-to-government relationships. That means they can do arrangements and projects together or deliver health care, as an example. That's being delivered throughout our state through tribal governments. The state should do this. And what happens is it's always whoever the governor is makes that determination. It has to be in our Constitution. And I think recognizing tribes, if we can't do it in the Constitution, we should do it statutorily, permanently, so it is not dependent on who's governor. I support it because I think there's some great things that tribes are doing. Delivery of health care, they are exceptional in this arena. Second, they are now doing justice, dealing with our justice system, which I want them to expand in this arena. Third, there are opportunities that I think in rural Alaska, especially Bush Alaska, where we should be doing compacts with them in regards to education delivery. Because the way the education system works now is when they reach a certain amount of kids, then we're done in the communities. If you take a school or an education facility out of a village, the village is going to go away. We can't afford that. So I want to create some compacts working with tribes on how we deliver culturally correct and sensitive education in rural Alaska that meets the needs of rural Alaska and these young people that desperately need education. So I'm pretty excited about it. And I think compacts are, and there's even more. There's some stuff they're doing with fisheries that I think is exciting. There's some stuff they're doing with their labs they're doing on testing fisheries that I think the state should be compacting with them. But if they're not recognized as a government, it makes it very complex. But if you recognize them as a government, then it's a very easy. You pick up the phone, you make an arrangement, you do it.
My dog is snoring.
he's tired.
He's almost nine. So
there we go.
He's always tired. And then this same listener wanted to know if you support the state financially assisting Native language revitalization efforts.
Yes. And when I was mayor, one of the things we did, Anchorage, you know, people describe it sometimes as the largest village in the state. It has an enormous number of Alaska Native people living there. But if you went downtown Anchorage when I became mayor, you would not know it was an Alaska Native community in any way. There was one item in the old city hall outside for recognizing Paratovich, and that was it. But nothing more. And I thought, something's wrong here. And so, you know, now you go there, the Dena Center, the convention center is named for the first people of the region. And you go in, I remember the conversation, my staff came in and says, wow, the names of the rooms are long and hard to pronounce. I said, good. They'll now know what the people of this community have been facing for generations, and we should educate people. And this is a great educational tool. I said, if you've never been to Hawaii's convention center, the names for Alaska rooms are going to be a lot easier. And they kind of laughed about it. And now you go in there and you see these names and you try to learn them, right? But just the Dena people, I think before we named that building, most people didn't even know what Dena was. And now they do. I remember when I became mayor, I asked Dorothy Cook from the Aklutna tribe to come and give us blessings on the lands, the traditional lands, and permission. She said she'd never done that for a mayor in the inauguration. I said, oh, why don't you do it for me? And she came and did it. And then about 2, 3, 4 weeks later, she calls me and says, oh, mayor, please stop. And I said, stop what? What are we doing? What is there some problem? She says, I'm getting called now by every conference in town. They want a blessing. And, you know, they start at 6 in the morning and some are 10 at night. And I said, but Dorothy, isn't this good? Yes, but I'm one person. I said, well, get your young people to do the blessings. And she pauses, you know, that's a really interesting idea. And I'm adopted into their tribe. And I said, you know, let's do this because this is what we do to help people understand the cultures that surround us and are within us. And the other thing we did, when we did a whole river creek restoration program throughout our whole city, every single display not only talked about the creek or the river, it also talked about the traditional Alaska Native use and what it meant and what it was called and why this was important. So it was an educational tool. It wasn't just a place where there's a park and a campground or a picnic table. It was more about understand what you have here and understand the city of Anchorage did not start in 1915. It started many generations before. My lieutenant governor candidate, Deborah Call, you know, her mother fished off the shores of Cook Inlet there. That's where their fish camp was, right there where the military base is. And she tells an incredible story of how, you know, that's how they fed their family. And when the military base came in, you know, it was basically wiped out. And, you know, she is an incredible woman. I'm glad she's on my ticket as lieutenant governor. But that's an example of what we have to do. So the simple answer is absolutely, I've done it. And I've done it without even, like, should we do it? It was like, why aren't we doing it? It was almost like, you know, why hasn't this been done by other people? This is embarrassing in a lot of ways as a state that has such a rich culture of Alaska Native people throughout.
That's pretty much what I had for questions. Anything else you wanted to add?
I would just say, you know, it's an interesting election. It's a fantastic opportunity, I think, for people to see the choices they have. You know, I've said, and I know the governor has too, you know, it's somewhat disappointing that our one of our opponents, you know, Senator Dunleavy doesn't like to show up at events, avoids these events. I mean, NAACP, you know, he didn't go to that one. He didn't go to another university one. The list goes on. And I think Alaskans want to know. They really want to know from your lips what you believe. And I think that's the great thing about campaigning. And, you know, this trip I'm on, this, you know, I flew into Juneau last night, came here this morning, fly out tonight to get the AFN tomorrow because Grand Camp is going on. And they had no candidate coming. And I said that because the AFN. And I said, well, I'll figure it out. You know, I think Grand Camp, which is a big, you know, event. And I said, if I can come by and have this conversation, you can ask questions. You know, if I'm fortunate and I win the election, you can count on this. just like I did when I was senator and mayor. And when I was on the Anchorage Assembly, I go on to call-in shows. I go on to radio shows, sometimes unannounced. I just show up, and I've done that before where I knock on the door and say, hey, I know you're live. Can I come on in? Also, we'll do tele-town hall meetings where, you know, people have a chance to talk to me directly, because not everyone can get to the Rotary. Not everyone can get to the chamber. People are working, and it's another reason why I ran, is there's so many people not at the power of the table of power. They're not able to go to Juneau and lobby and have a lobbyist. They're working 2-3 jobs. And the example I give, I remember on my schedule recently, I saw these 3 events, and one was with the Nigerian community, the Cameroon community, and the Sudanese community. And I looked at it, and I said, oh, okay, great. And they say, okay, they're 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I said, great. And then I looked a little closer, 9 p.m., 10 p.m. And I remember one, the Nigerian community, I was headed out, and I was going out 9:30 p.m. They had there by 10, and they called and said, you're going to be too early. Can you come closer to 11:30 p.m.? And I said, yes, I will. And so I went out there, over 100 people. They have a meeting, and then they have food and entertainment and so forth. And the reason is because they're working, most of them, 2 jobs. They don't have the time. They can't meet during the day. And it's always Saturdays in a home or in some place that they can all gather. And that's the part of Alaska that I think politicians have forgotten. And in a lot of ways, that's who we should be serving. Because a lot of us have ability, you know, to access and do all that. But so many don't have the time and don't have the capacity because of their workloads and family life and whatever. And that's who we got to remember. And that's what you'll see. If I'm elected governor, you will see me out more than you probably want. But thank you.
Did you get to eat Nigerian food?
I did. Actually, everything is, there's some similarities between all 3, but it was, yeah, I'm not sure exactly, honestly, what it was, but there's some.
Was it delicious?
It was there, you know, and somewhat spicy on some, but somewhat others was bland. A lot of meats, a lot of kind of paste, potato-based mm-hmm. kind of foods, but actually it was very good. I mean, it was, you know, someone asked me, what kind of foods do you not like? And I said, I eat anything. And what I loved was they're great sharing communities. Very similar when you go to the Alaska Native community. I mean, it is food, Filipino community, I mean, Korean community, it's food. And I'm always willing to test it. But it's some food I couldn't even remember the names, but it's stuff I've never had before. And it was good, yeah. And it's all homemade.
Right.
You know, and yeah. What's amazing, they're showing up in cars and big batches of this food would show up, and they'd have, and it was also, dance is a big part mm-hmm. of the culture. So a lot, and it doesn't, you're not, you know, it's kind of so different because it's not about, you know, do you have something to dance with? Everyone just goes and dances and communicate with each other and talk while they're on the dance. It's very interesting, and I enjoyed it. It was fun, and yes, they dragged me on the dance floor. Yes, they did. And they came in their dress, and it was just amazing. And kids, lots of kids, even that late at night, because yeah. their view is this is when they get to spend time. And their Sunday is relaxation. And so, you know, we have to recognize that. And I think that's the uniqueness of this state, is this diversity that sometimes we don't see right away. And then at night when we're sleeping, the state is still alive with activity. And we have to remember, the other place I love going to is bingo halls. And I call out bingo numbers at weird hours. And what I find so many times, it's a social hour. It's not about winning. Well, they all want to win. Don't get me wrong. Split the pot, everything. But they are, the social environment that occurs there is just amazing. And in Anchorage with the Alaska Native community, it's one of the gathering places. And you see friends and family, and they'll tell you, oh, Mark, you know, you haven't met my cousin. She's in town for AFN, and we're all just here together tonight. And it's just an amazing part. It excites me. I mean, my wife can't stand it because when I come home, I'm like, you know, energized, as I will be tonight when I get home about 10:30, and she'll say, please go to sleep. There we go. Thank you for letting me ramble a little bit.
Thanks.